Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We obviously are in a world now where the truth has become the first casualty. You know, it's Muslims are out killing, completely ignorant of the fact that their religion is a complete and utter fraud, that there is no God named Allah, that Muhammad was not a prophet, that the Quran is filled with contradictions and lies. And, you know, the same is true of the Christians that they are killing. There was an announcement that came out this morning, you know, after the beheading of 21 Christians, that some 45 Muslims were burned to death by the Islamic State just today. This in a town called Al-Baghdadi, which is west of Baghdad. And I've even read articles recently where there are former U.S. military personnel who are going over to Iraq now as mercenaries to fight in Christian militias against the Muslims. How do you think that's all going to turn out, Kirk?
Badly. My nephew, who was in the Army and served is probably a poor word, volunteered for two times over there in Iraq. He came back a bit of disillusioned as well as injured. And but they offered him, he wanted to go back because they offered hundreds of thousands of dollars to be in the black ops. So there's a lot of money flowing around to come home and join them. I mean, mercenary armies are... It's just, the whole thing is just a total mess.
Hundreds of thousands of dollars mm-hmm. to be part of a mercenary army.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And who's offering this?
Probably the CIA, if you really want to know the truth. They say these different companies, but they all seem to be... remember when we still had a lot of control over, so-called, over Afghanistan? A lot of it was in Afghanistan, and then they were rebuilding this, that, and the other, and they asked for security forces. So they would offer them, if you leave the army or you're about to finish up your hitch, mm-hmm. come back and join us.
Right. Oh, yeah, there were reenlistment bonuses, and they were large.
Yeah.
And now what we sit with is that the CIA is paying for a mercenary army. It's a way that they can have plausible deniability.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, Glenn, what's going to say?
Yeah. Well, it's pathetic. You know, it reminds me of the story that Yosha reminded us of in Yao Kanan 3, where he was talking about the reference to Moshe lifting up the serpent on an upright pole. And the reason it reminds me of this is that, you know, God, what the people wanted was to rid the realm of snakes.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted God to eliminate the snakes. God said, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to eliminate the snakes because there's a purpose in a serpent. And a serpent, of course, we're not talking about, from God's point of view, the symbolism has nothing to do with the creepy crawly thing.
Mm-hmm.
It has all to do with the adversary, Hasatan, Hillel ben Shakar, Satan, who he refers to as a serpent, as a snake, because it slithers around and bites the unsuspecting, and its bite is venomous. It'll kill you. You'll die. And you'll die typically of paralysis before you succumb. And the reason that God says, you know, I'm not going to rid the wilderness of snakes is that it's those snakes that provide the option to be stupid, to be religious. And that option's got to be there. Otherwise, there's no purpose of having free will or choice or you know, why have an invitation to join Yahweh seven times a year at his Moed Mikre if there isn't any other option.
Can you still hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, sure. About the mercenaries, that's unusual because so often we're told that privatization leads to greater efficiency. Well, if they're paying hundreds of thousands of dollars to these ex-military guys, they were clearly costing a lot less when they were part of the military. So that's the opposite of privatization being efficient.
Well, the issue is that in the military, the actual cost of the individual is much greater than paying them $100,000 to be a mercenary, because of the support and control mechanisms and the training and the weaponry, and U.S. military costs what about $650 billion, and then if you add that there are spy apparatus like the CIA and NSA to it, it's about $1 trillion a year. We're squandering $1 trillion a year because it's really expensive and very inefficient. Yeah, it's true that the individual costs are higher privatized, but not the collective costs. And the reason I was making the transition here, and it's a valid point, is that these mercenaries, the American CIA, the American military, the religious zealots on all sides, the Zoroastrians, the Christians, the Shia Muslims, the Sunni Muslims, all of the religious belligerents, they're the serpents. The wilderness now, it's not like there are an occasional serpent that will slither up to you and bite you. It's like the Indiana Jones movie where he fell down into the pit, and the pit was just covered, the entire bottom of the pit was covered with snakes. Yeah, that is what we have in much of the world now, where every step is a snake. And God said, I'm not going to get rid of the snakes. The snakes serve a purpose. What I'm going to do is I'm going to provide you a remedy for the snake. And all three of us at one time in our lives were one of the snakes.
Mm-hmm.
We'd all been bitten by the snake. You went to Bible college for a while there, Glenn, and both Kirk and I, we were engaged big time as Christians. And so, it's... there has to be a remedy for that venom, and it is.
Yahweh provided, the brazen serpent for them to look upon and be healed.
Right.
What's one thing in terms of humans having the power to be stupid and corrupt things? I believe it's also the case that later on, under the reforms of Hezekiah, that serpent was brass serpent was destroyed because the people have begun to look at. To it
object
as like
worship.
An idol.
Right, yeah. Object to worship. Yeah, that's how we are. When Yosha said, I'm not going to trust my testimony to men because I know what's in men's hearts and it's evil that lurks there. We, as humankind, have this tendency to corrupt most everything for personal gain. And you can turn in an object, and the purpose of the brazen serpent was that Moshe, who was the conduit through whom Yahweh gave us his Torah teaching, said, I'm going to lift up on the upright pole here a remedy for the serpent. Now, it wasn't a remedy for the wombat. Otherwise, we'd have put a wombat on the pole. It wasn't a remedy for a platypus. So there were no platypi up there on the pole. It was the object on the pole represented a solution for the venom of a serpent's bite, the toxins associated with that, which are the symbol for religious corruption, and all Yahweh was saying is that upon this upright pillar, if you look upon the upright pillar, which is symbolic of Yahusha, symbolic of the central post of the tabernacle, the upright one. If you look upon that, there's a cure. And yet they turned it, the symbolism, into a religious icon and into a god. Yeah, we're pretty twisted in that way, aren't we?
Yeah. Yeah. We like to twist things. It's a good thing Bill Clinton isn't still president during this age of ISIS, because he's not even sure what the meaning of "is" is. So
IS
would really screw him up. See, we can twist anything.
Yeah, but I think he was questioning what the meaning of "it" is.
It depends on what the meaning of "is" is. Yeah.
Oh, okay. I thought it was it, because he was saying, you know, did you have sex with that woman? And
No, that wasn't the context. No, that wasn't the context. It was what the meaning of "is". Yeah. Anyway. So, oh, by the way, have you noticed how, speaking of humans twisting things to avoid things they don't want to see or deal with, have you been following the Danish spoutings about IS and the killings over there?
Yeah,
Denmark.
I've got that. Is that was
the
next item in my news cast, and
and
they're having a terrible time because the Danes are like most of those around the most nations around the Baltic. They pride themselves in tolerance. They were among the first to embrace the political correct concept of tolerance with a vengeance. I mean, they are tolerant to religious zeal, and they don't recognize that it's their tolerance that has made the merciless. You know, it when you tolerate everything, then you're tolerating evil, and it's this tolerance which has enabled evil to infect their society, and their inability to distinguish it as evil, because they're tolerant, that has led to the constant onslaught of Islamic terrorism in the Netherlands, just as it is also in France, another country that prides itself on its extreme tolerance. Tolerance is not a virtue. Tolerance is not merciful. It's not compassion. It's the opposite of those things. And that's the problem.
It's cowardly, too.
Yes, it is. Yeah, it is. It's merciless. We'll be back, and we'll talk about that serpent on the upright pole. Returning to Yosha's statements in Yohanan 3, when he said that, he says, just as Moshe lifted up the snake in the desert, so likewise, in the same way, in the same manner, the Son of Man must be lifted up, in order that everyone who relies on him might have a hold on eternal life. So he is equating himself, his role as the Son of Man, not, by the way, the Son of God, which is kind of interesting, isn't it? As the Son of Man, to this Moshe lifting up the snake on the upright pole in the wilderness. So it is, there's a connection that needs to be made there, and it wasn't a cross that snake was on.
No.
And it wasn't just a happenstance kind of a situation that Yosha was up on an upright pole on any day of the year. It was Passover.
Yeah.
So there's a connection between the upright pole providing a remedy but during Moshe's time and the upright pillar of the doorway to life being sprinkled with the blood of the Passover lamb. Got to think these things through. If you don't think them through, because he said it's in the same way. And who was the one that provided the remedy for the snake bite? Was it Yahweh? Yeah, it was Yahweh, wasn't it? Wasn't Jesus Christ?
No, he was the Lamb.
Yeah, in the same way. This is how the text reads, and by the way, it speaks of eternal life. It doesn't say salvation. Christians are wont to equate eternal life to salvation, but eternal life is just one aspect of salvation, is it not?
Right. That's the first Passover.
Yeah. And you can have eternal life and not be saved.
Right.
That's the case with Satan, his demons, and those religious zealots who
embrace him.
Absolutely. So this is, he's only speaking of eternal life. And eternal life is what happened on that upright pole. So he's making not a reference to salvation, but a reference to eternal life that's a direct result of what occurred on the upright pillars of the doorway of Passover and Moshe's ability, not Moshe's ability, Yahweh's ability, through his instruction to Moshe on that upright pole to restore people to life who would have been killed by the snake's venom. And so here it is. During the Exodus, the Yisrael spoke against God, and Moshe saying, "Why have you brought us up out of Egypt to die in this desert?" You know, people, we are. Can you imagine saving them from the life of slavery, where they where the young boys were murdered, sons were murdered, women, men and women were forced to make bricks and build buildings and religious shrines for the Egyptians, and not paid, beaten. And they are freed from the Egyptians, and they're grumbling against God and Moshe, saying, "Why have you brought us out of Egypt to die in this desert? There is no bread, there is no water, and we detest this miserable food." So then Yahweh said, "If you don't like me," he sent venomous snakes among them. I mean, we talked about the snakes have a purpose. Well, Yahweh sent them. He says, "Okay, you don't like me. This is the option. You know, you don't like being with me. I'm going to give you to the alternative, the serpent." So don't think for a moment that God doesn't recognize there's a purpose to venomous snakes. They bit the people, and many Israelites died. And the people came to Moshe and said, "We sinned when we spoke against Yahweh, and you asked that Yahweh will take the snakes away from us." So Moshe made the request for the people. Yahweh said to Moshe, "Make a snake and put it on a pole. Anyone who is bitten can look on it and live." Bamidbar, in the wilderness, Numbers 21, 5 through 9. Didn't take the snakes away, did he?
No.
Nope.
Solution.
He just says, "I've got a solution. I've always had the solution." You know, and in this particular case, he is foreshadowing what he was going to do on the upright pole. He is telling us about the Edon, the upright pole of the tabernacle of God's home. And, you know, it's Edon, upright pillar, throughout the Torah. It's never Edon, Lord. Yes, go ahead.
He's still talking to Nicodemus at this point. Is Nicodemus getting this, do you think?
No.
He's not connecting the dots at all?
No. No, in fact, Yosha said so. He said, why don't you understand this? And then he said, you know, if I speak to you about the things that are of this world, you'd understand them. How in the world are you going to understand that which is spiritual? And then he made an explanation. You know, he tried to explain it to him that it's going to be similar to Moshe lifting up the snake in the desert as a remedy for the poisonous nature of the serpent of Hasatan and the alternative to Yahweh. And then he went on, he said, you know, "For God so loved the world that he gave as a gift his one and only Son, that whoever relies on him should not perish but have eternal life." He's still back into eternal life with the Son, based upon being part of the eternal family of God, based upon the instruction on the family of God, the covenant, as it's explained in the Torah, based upon what occurred on Passover on the upright pole. So it's in context, it's all of those things. I mean, he began by saying, you know, this whole thing began by driving people out of the temple. It migrated from driving people out of the temple to saying, you know, that he does not want in God's home religious and financial activity.
Yeah.
To him showing up in town for Passover. And do you think there's a reason that all this occurred at Passover and he's talking about the upright pole and being lifted up on the upright pole at Passover? And they don't get it? And that's the doorway to life. And then from there he goes in and talks about how you have to be born spiritually into the family of God. And as a teacher, you ought to know where to look for the family of God. And then based upon becoming part of the covenant family, being born spiritually into the covenant family, and then relying on the doorway to life, which is Passover, which we're invited to participate in as God's children, this is the means to eternal life.
So he understands absolutely nothing, so the benefit...
No. No, and Nicodemus isn't following him.
So the benefit of religious learning is zero.
Yeah, the problem is that if you've been indoctrinated as a in religion, or if you were an indoctrinator, which he would have been as a leading rabbi, as a Pharisee, once you've gone to the point that you're actually indoctrinating others in the religion, there really isn't any hope for you. Then it's over. So, I think that was the problem with Nicodemus. Certainly up to this point, he didn't get it. But I wouldn't say that Nicodemus is alone.
No.
There isn't a single Christian that gets it. They don't know where to look. They don't know who the set-apart spirit is. They don't know what the family of God is. They don't know understand the reference to the upright pole, why this is in conjunction with Passover. They've not made any of these connections, and therefore they're not in a position to trust and rely.
Well, you still have to dig it out. Even if you go to the Torah, you still have to dig out and see what these words actually mean. Because it's so copy edited. I mean, so it takes a lot of work. You have to want to do it.
It does. And you know, it's very sad at the moment. I've just gotten an email from Larry about two women who are claiming that the translations that I provided. Remember, we had that long review of Davidim 12, where Yahweh creates an exemption for food, and they are trying to trash my reputation, which, you know, I don't much care.
Yeah, but still.
But what they're doing is trying to trash the translations that I have provided for people for them to consider.
Can I say something about that?
Yeah.
I mean, I know feelings are tender now, but I don't do Facebook, you know. When we call in on Friday,
I think it's a terrible thing.
I don't think you can even read my name or Terry's name. Well, right. We're kind of unsophisticated.
Yeah, I don't do Facebook either.
But anyway, we have one, and she read some of that, and I read some of it. And it seemed to me the argument was that he is not consistent because he changed that towards the end. But, you know, so I went to... in Genesis 1, 29, 30, and 31. And I was reading that in a translation, a better translation, and he basically starts us out, at that time and place, they were vegetarians. Mm-hmm. He doesn't say eat meat. He doesn't say, of course, they didn't need to eat any meat because there was no Passover needed.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, it seems to me that he is consistently inconsistent in the sense that at this time and place, this is very helpful for you.
Right.
These are slaves that just came out of Egypt. They've been fed whatever they were given.
Right.
They were in control of their lives, and all of a sudden he's saying, okay, now take control of your life. Let me tell you some things that's going to harm you and some things that ain't going to harm you.
Right, right, exactly.
And so to me, it's just another teaching scenario. And then later,
right,
we're now at the very end of this play.
Mm-hmm.
It's playing itself out in the last days, and quite frankly, we're a heck of a lot healthier, at least in most parts of the world, where we can
right,
we can eat certain things that ain't going to kill you. So there's no danger there to
no.
There is minuscule
no,
danger.
The message of the statement is so clear, but you've got lots of people who, even though they recognize that you ought not be religious and that God doesn't, that the Torah is not laws,
yeah,
there's one rule that they think it's a rule. It's not a rule. It's an instruction.
Yeah.
The food is always presented as an instruction, never as a law.
No.
And yet, for some reason, pork is this fixation with people. You know, I can do that. I can take pork out of my diet, and God's just going to love me for it.
Yeah.
And so they when you tell them that, you know, God has provided now on three different occasions recommendations as to what was good and not good for you to eat. And then at four occasions, because you've got Yosha saying, eat what's ever put before you.
Yeah.
And so you have four recommendations, four different times as to what you should and shouldn't eat and the reasons for it. And they can't deal with it. And they can't realize that, you know, the difference between, and you brought it up here, the difference between an instruction and a law is that instructions, guidance, fatherly guidance is pertinent to place and time. The circumstances change. You have to change, make an exemption for what you previously said. What you said was true for that time.
Yeah. What's the hang-up?
What's the hang-up? I mean, are we still, would we be inconsistent if we change the rules on transportation when, you know, 200 years ago, the fastest thing you had was a horse and carriage, and now you've got jet aircraft?
Yeah. Well, I tell people all the time, you want to paint like the Renaissance guys, take off your glasses.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have any, so
if
you want to do like them, do like me.
Yeah, there's a reason they popularized the Impressionist style.
Yeah. But, I mean,
you couldn't deal with fine lines unless you know. Yeah.
Well,
no, it's if you're a father and you don't provide advice that is germane to the time about ordinary affairs, then you're a lousy father.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to say, listen, here's my covenant. It's my eternal family. With my eternal family, I'm going to establish the requirements for participating, and I'm going to tell you what the benefits are, and I'm going to establish the invitations for us to meet together. And he can say, that's eternally true throughout time.
Yeah.
Although, when he gets into the details about how to observe them, he has to be flexible because you can't observe them the same way they did then.
Yeah, there's no temple.
There's no temple. There's no lowly priesthood, and there's we don't butcher our own lambs as they once did. So the symbolism, the instructions, are all valid for things that are eternal. But what we have access to and what we eat, that's a really is a timely discussion, and it's just disgusting to me. I mean, it's just repulsive to me that you have this this big fight and all of the nasty disagreements,
yeah,
hostility,
yeah,
that is going on over this, because they don't like the idea that God carved out an exemption because it was the right thing to do.
Well, you know, Yosha, I think, if we can count on what the witness writing said, he said, what comes out of your mouth is more deadly than what you put in it.
That's what he's trying to tell us?
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And just to beat a dead horse, flog a dead horse, there was a passage in there that Yale University in about the 30s did a study on. They said, wait a minute, here's a bird that they're told not to eat. And
yeah,
this bird is perfectly good. There's nothing wrong with this bird. It's like all the other birds. And they did a study in the 30s, and they found that this particular bird would stop by on its migration to Israel. It would fly into a certain area where they would eat certain things and drink from certain things, and it would create a poison. And when the birds would fly to Israel, if you ate those birds, you would be poisoned too. So he detected them. He said, don't eat these particular birds. And it made absolutely no sense in the context of there. And that bird you could eat fine in North America, but you couldn't eat it over there because of where its migration patterns were.
Yeah.
So I mean, come on, guys.
Yeah. I mean, in this particular case, you've got these two women that are purporting to have talked to Hebrew scholars. They say five of them.
We just talked to one. It's called Nicodemus.
we've been listening to one called Nicodemus.
How good is it?
Anyway, the Hebrew scholars. And their issue is there's the a third-person masculine singular pronoun that's associated with the second verb, a call, which is to eat, in the Devarim 12:15 passage. And they, as singular, it can't refer to the clean and unclean because those are two. It's referring to the meat that you can eat, which is masculine, and it is singular. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. We're having a conversation about Devarim 12, where Yahweh creates an exemption for food. It is consistent with Yosha's statement, eat whatever is put in before you. As a matter of fact, without the exemption, you have a absentee father who is would be unaware of changes in food preparation. And Yahweh was not an absentee father as it relates to his children. And also, you'd have Yosha directly contradicting the Torah, which means that he could not be the Maaseyah, should this exemption not be there when he said, eat whatever is put in front of you. And it would have also been in conflict with the Torah when he made the statement, it's not what you goes into your mouth, it's what comes out of your mouth that is deadly. The issue here happens to be this person, this idiot, that just revolting. It just the whole thing is just so disgusting to me, and I'll talk to you why it's so disgusting. Says I'll never trust these translations again. There wasn't a issue on the translation of any word. Not an issue. Not every word was. Every word. And in fact, I always provide the words, and I encourage people. I say, you know, don't trust my translations. Yeah. You know, you go look up the words. I'm going to do the best I can. I'm going to lay it before you. You can think about it and feel free to. In fact, you should be encouraged to translate the word. No question on the translation of the word. It was the use of the pronoun. And this pronoun happened to be the it's third person masculine singular, and these scholars have alleged that the singular doesn't mean singular. That no, you can it could have been dual, and you know it's an amateur mistake to think of singular as singular that, you know, God's inconsistent. He would have used a singular pronoun to speak of two things. I mean, come on. That's the best you got. And for that, you're going to go into a diatribe about scholars and trusting and translations. I mean, Kirk, I don't get paid for any of this.
I know. It's just why bother?
I mean, yeah, you don't. You don't either. I do it so when it's fun. You join, you know. I really enjoy doing programs with you.
Well, thank you.
And you know, and when it's fun, it's worth doing. But this is not a job.
No,
I'm not a lowy.
Yeah,
I'm not. If it ceases to be fun, I'm going to stop doing it.
Yeah.
And it's things like this that I just find repulsive. And you know what's amazing here is even if you were to change the meat being clean or unclean to the unclean or clean or unclean people can eat it, it's still an exemption.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only reason they don't care about that exemption is that's an exemption to something they don't pay any attention to because they don't pay any attention to the instructions on hygiene. because they recognize hygiene has changed so much. They don't pay any attention to those. They pay attention to the goddamn pig.
Yeah. Well, there's a ton of things. Sound like a bunch of old rabbis in the Talmud again. And,
And, oh, my goodness.
You know, Dode probably wasn't eating kosher when he was being run chased all over the place by Sheol.
No. In fact, kosher, kosher is a religious concept.
I know. get a grip.
Oh, my goodness. So you actually did, personally, I will never go, and I will never seek out any of this. I never read it. I never respond to it. Larry's a good friend. I like Larry. Mm-hmm. I mean, I know that Larry rubs a lot of people the wrong way because he's very aggressive and blunt. I like that style. I like people who are blunt. So I like Larry. And so this response is something that Larry sent to me as the show was being aired here today. And so I won't even tie it to my reentry place. And we've got Diane on hold here, and I do want to hear from Diane. But my reentry place on Yahukhanan 3. Which is that Yahweh arranged to have the snake lifted up. The snake still exists. He arranged to have a remedy. And, you know, if you want to quibble about... I'm sorry, Diane, for not being able to bring you in. I hope you can call in tomorrow. If you want to quibble about the do's and don'ts, then at least acknowledge that the Torah does not exist for perfect people.
No.
The Torah exists to perfect us. It's the remedy.
And that happens on matzah.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you, Kirk.